When you come in on Monday and you're not feeling real well, does anyone ever say to you, sounds like someone has a case of the Mondays?
No. No, man. No, man. I believe you get your ass kicked saying something like that, man.
Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a...
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the f*** are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the f*** is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, welcome back, Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Matt, front of the board, Jim Waller in studio. We should have Mr. Chad Flanagan and Mr. Mike Murphy on to talk about our what's going on in the Middle East. For those that do a little bit of geography and a little bit of stuff on what's going on over there, kind of odd situation is you got two countries kind of at war with a couple countries in between them. And a lot of stuff appears to be over those countries, which, you know, Mike will probably be able to, whenever he piles on, he'll be able to tell us about that. Plus, he could talk us about, Jimmy, were they already doing World Cup soccer and it's not until next year or something? Are people already qualifying? Is this?
Oh, yes. They have their qualifying rounds now.
But I thought, well, we'll talk about it a little bit, but I don't get how.
You got to get down to 64 teams. I mean, you have how many countries competing? Over 100. So you got to have qualifiers.
Well, S&P futures are up 28 after being down a chunk last night. NASDAQ futures up 116. We were down a bunch on Friday. So, of course, you have to, you got to buy the dip no matter what. I can't say that the news is that much better now than it was on Friday, but evidently, maybe not as bad either. So, Matt, who'd you say we have?
Oh, we have Mike on the phone.
We have Mike. Hey, Mike, how are you, bud?
Morning, Tom. How are you?
Doing fine. Actually, the weather here is pretty nice. Supposed to get more humid this week, but so far we've been fine. Were you in, all the rain they had at the tournament, were you? The U.S. Open?
No, I wasn't. I was working yesterday, but we're getting a lot of rain here in Virginia, so.
You see the end of the Open yesterday? It was pretty interesting. Everybody was slogging around in the muck. I don't know if you saw any of that, but it was pretty interesting.
Yeah, no, I didn't, actually. But a complete unknown won it, so that's something.
Well, he was in a playoff earlier in the year. He's played real well this year. I mean, he might be, if you'd have watched, you know, some of the, I've watched a few of them this year. He's been knocking at the door.
Well, good for him.
Yeah, I've never, Jimmy and I were talking on the way in. The U.S. Open, for those that don't know, it's one of the courses, every tournament has their own kind of style. And their style is to make it, like, the rough about as difficult as possible as you can. And one of the issues they had when they were here down at Olympia Fields was they kind of pissed at Olympia because the rough wasn't high enough. So some of the scores were kind of low for the U.S. Open. But there was a summer where we didn't have hardly any rain. Well, the opposite happened this week. You know, Mike, what are they trying to get the rough, like 8 inches or something for this?
Yeah.
It's huge.
Who knows, Tom? They like it bad for...
But then it rained for...
Particularly at Oakmont, I think.
Yeah,
so.
But then it rained for like 3-4 straight days. How the hell are they going to cut it? It is so high now that I don't know how I wouldn't want to be the guy with the lawnmower. They got to get some. It got to the point where, Mike, if the ball was heading into a trap, it'd go down the slope of the trap and it wouldn't make it to the trap. It would stick in the downslope. I've never seen that.
Yeah, that's pretty. That's some pretty high rough, but that's the way they like it for the Open. So
yeah. So hey, John will be on in a bit, and Jimmy here knows a lot about soccer as well. He played what. Two things. What is going on in the World Cup this early? And my question, I guess, is don't all these guys play for other teams? I thought they, when the World Cup came up, all the other teams either their seasons finished and so forth, and then they all got to go play for the World Cup. I didn't realize it was like 2 years in a row. How do you stop your other, or all the other leagues not doing anything now? How does this all work? It seems like it's a long time. It's 2 years from now, right?
No, yes. but they have certain periods of time during the year when they allow that for international games. So they have friendlies or they have qualifiers or whatever. So the World Cup takes priority for FIFA. So and FIFA, although a pretty crooked organization, does a very good job of staging, you know, the prelims for the World Cup.
So who's all playing? I mean, is every country already playing this year, or just the ones that are on the edge?
No, everybody has to play because every region has a series of qualifiers, and then the top teams make the World Cup.
Well, how many? But they expanded the World Cup, right? More teams.
I don't know, Tom. I have no idea.
I think they did.
If they expand it, they, you know, like Africa has, you know, probably the best eight teams play there, and then they get it down to one or two, and then they qualify for the World Cup.
Okay, so they're nowhere near everybody, even though they expanded it a little bit.
Well, I mean, you have to be good enough to qualify, too. Okay. I mean, these podunk countries like, what would be a good example? Well, Iran's not so bad. They have qualified. Like Israel, for instance, I don't know whether they would qualify. Or Turkey a lot of times doesn't qualify because they're playing against Europe. And some of the good teams in Europe, never, like Wales, well, that's not a good team. That's not a good example. But sometimes England, well, England usually does qualify.
Well, so then
Ireland, for instance.
We didn't qualify last time, did we?
We might have qualified, but we—I don't even know if we didn't advance. I think we were in it, but we didn't make the semifinals or anything like that.
Knockout round.
Yeah, I think there was one year we didn't get in. Might have been two ago, where it was a big. But if you host it, you're in anyway, right?
Yes, that's true.
Well, so at the end of this year, they're down to however many teams are going to show up for next year. That's the idea?
Yes, that is the idea.
And where do they play all these games? Just wherever they, like, obviously the African qualifications are somewhere in Africa, and it's sort of a regional thing?
Yes, and they're doing exhibitions in the United States to test out the fixtures where they're going to have games, so.
Really? Well, okay.
Oh, yeah, there's always friendlies going on.
But These regional things, I'm sure they're real well attended, I would guess, in the areas that they're playing them, right?
I don't know about well attended, but you know, I don't track the attendance at them. So,
okay.
But I'm sure they probably are. You know, some of those countries have big rivalries. So,
all right. Well, we normally go through our sports report this week, but our baseball. But other than the Cubs being in there, we could probably shelve that because we got wars and assassinations and all kinds of other stuff to talk about. What's going on in the Middle East? Mike, people are just getting the headlines, I'm sure, but I did a little work over the weekend. How the hell do you have a war when two countries are 1,100 miles apart? I mean, it's kind of an odd... I mean, it's not odd. If the thing lands on your head, it's not odd, right? But it seems a little sort of strange, isn't it? I mean, is anybody going to try and... What are the... I'm sure you don't have the litany of all the international rules, but... Can you just lob this crap over other people's countries, or if the countries are Syria and Iraq, you don't care? You just do it anyway?
They might just do it anyway. Usually they have to get permission. We always go for permission to overfly areas, and sometimes that hurts things. Like when I was with the Army in Germany, we always had to go around Austria because they would never let us transport military vehicles through Austria, so there was always workarounds for that. For instance,
you know, on the roads or in the air,
on the roads and probably in the air too. Probably most likely both. Yeah.
But now, if you're in orbit, if you get up high enough, then people make the rules. People like us say that's okay, right?
I guess so. Yeah. You know, ballistic missiles is a whole different thing. So.
Well, the stuff that Iraq is winging. Those are, and I guess some of them, I was reading last night, they have some that can go 2,500 miles, some go 1,800 miles. And I don't think...
You mean that Iran.
And but they're not necessarily guided. They're like Scud 2 or 3. I mean, they power them up and then they then they just make it down on their own, right? They can't change course in midair on those things, can they?
No, I don't think so.
You know, the Israeli stuff, they probably can.
Well, and the Israelis now, they're saying that they have air superiority over the capital and over some of the nuclear sites. They still haven't, they were talking about it on the news this morning, actually. There's a big site where they do a lot of development called Fordo or Ferdo, whatever, and they haven't been able to make much headway on that one. So they supposedly need bunker busters from us to do that, and we haven't provided them yet.
But now the planes are flying over. They're not flying all the way around. They're flying over somebody, right, to get there. And I'm guessing if it's 1,000 miles each way, they probably need mid-air refueling, don't they?
They might. Yep.
Now, can they do that, or do we do that for them?
No, I bet you they do that themselves.
All right.
So the Israelis are pretty much self-contained, Tom.
Okay.
They can pretty much handle themselves.
But I mean, they don't have a. I doubt if they had their own tanker contract. They're buying some from somebody, right?
Oh, yeah, that's probably true. Yeah.
So they probably got a couple of our old ones, the old 707 jobs?
Yeah, that could be. Tom, you got me on this one. I haven't been following this for a long time. So.
Well, man, it's kind of sputtery. Don't you miss back in the day when there actually were weekly news magazines and everything? When you hear something about a war, I know we were living on the south side when the one of the Israeli wars. I don't know. I'm not disparaging. I'm just saying one of them had to be in the 80s. That's when we were living down there. You'd hear all this stuff on the news, and then you'd get, you know, your U.S. News and World Report delivered to your house. And in the middle, there'd be a, you know, 20-page or more expose on, all right, the Israelis have this kind of this many planes and all the maps and all the stuff that's in there. So you actually could read through it, you know, not that long and figure out what the hell's going on. Pretty hard to get all that. I'm sure it's on the Internet somewhere, but, you know, you don't really get that kind of clarity anymore, at least in one spot, do you?
No, it's very hard to...
Well, how does this... I guess how does something like this... How do you win? They just... Israelis knock stuff on it. It seems what's kind of weird, though, Mike, is the Israelis are looking at specific targets and the stuff the Iranians are lobbing, they just hit anywhere. Is it...
I think that's pretty accurate. The Iranians went after a lot of civilian areas in both Tel Aviv and Haifa. So, I mean, the Israelis, at least there's, I think, some sort of a theme that runs through it that they're targeting military installations and some of the military or some of the leadership also. It might not be military leadership. And they're going after the nuclear infrastructure. So that's what the Israelis are concerned about. And as long as Israel is at war, Netanyahu stays in power. So I think this has a lot to do with his strategy.
Well, yeah. They also have. They have planes in the air. So their stuff is directed, as I mentioned earlier. I don't think if you lob just a ballistic missile. I'm coughing a little bit, but once you unpower it, you have no idea really where it's going, do you? Other than...
No, I think they have a general idea where it's going. They would have targeted... I mean, they're targeting large cities now, so... And, they had some pictures on the news this morning that, you know, the Iranians hit parts of Tel Aviv hard.
I guess my question that probably none of us can answer, are they trying to hit the Tel Aviv airport and just missing?
Who knows, Tom? I mean, I just think they have the big target in there of Tel Aviv and just start lobbing stuff at Tel Aviv.
Yeah, I guess. Well, it's kind of a waste of a missile if you land it on somebody's house, even though it's bad for the guy in the house, right?
Right. It's bad for the whole neighborhood.
Yeah. What do you think's making notice? I mean, I've heard North Koreans, I've heard the Chinese.
Be both, and the Iranians have had the infrastructure to do that too. So,
what kind of those things are they? The kind that could be? No, when I say those things, look like there are like four different types. I was reading last night. mean, the bigger ones, they can't be launched off a truck. They got to have probably kind of a sight, huh?
They usually would have, I would say, a fixed site for as a launch point. But they also have mobile stuff, too. So.
Well, but it's never going to be at a point where, well, we hope, that the Iranians put a million people together and try and, well, what was it, 1,100 miles is the closest point between the two countries?
Yeah, but, they could stage something maybe from Yemen or... I'm not sure where. But
I mean, if there was an invasion of some kind, they'd have to tramp 1,100 miles through somebody else's place, right?
Right, but that's where the Hezbollah used to be an effective threat for Iran, but Israel's pretty much decimated them. So you supposedly had 100,000 troops with the Lebanese Hezbollah, but they're pretty much out of the picture now, I think.
Were they paid for, guys? Or were they Iranian regulars?
No. Those were Hezbollah. They wouldn't have been Iranian regulars. Those were strictly, well, whether Lebanese or, but probably mostly the Hezbollah in Lebanon. Excuse me.
Well, for those guys that are hanging around, who buys the chow? Who buys the bullets? Who pays them? I mean, or they just have nothing better to do? I mean. It's a hard thing to say, but...
No, I think someone is probably paying them, and it's probably either the Iranians or the Lebanese Hezbollah organization.
Are they somewhat similar to the... Who was the guy that Putin blew up the whole plane to kill? Who were those guys? His mercenary force. They stopped paying them, right? The Russians?
I don't know, Tom. That one, you got me on that one. But
remember the guy who was the head of it?
Hezbollah has their own funding stream. It's not... And okay. Just like Hamas.
The key, if you look at the geography, one of the key spots here is Syria and Iraq. The guy who's running Syria, boy, his name's been off the front page for a while. The guy who took over there, and then all of a sudden, it's so hard to get on the front page now, isn't it?
Yeah, it probably is. You're right about that.
God, this week we only have, what do we have to talk about? We have assassinations in Minnesota. We've got the air crash. We've got the market. We've got oil prices, which were up like 20% last week. Do you have enough to talk about, Mike? Can you believe that this air crash now? I don't know if you're watching this stuff, but they think now the co-pilot might have screwed it up.
Which air crash? I'm not sure what you're talking about.
The 787 that went down in India.
Oh, I don't know anything about that one.
Well, I don't know if you saw the film, but it's, I think it was up in the air and it's just flying along at like 400 feet and just goes down. Well, they had some expert on there and he goes, I've seen the film like 100 times. He goes, it looks like when the thing goes up, the first thing you do is raise the landing gear, right?
Right.
And evidently the landing gear was still down. And I thought something looked kind of weird on the wings, and I'm no expert. Guy said the flaps were up. He goes, I think the pilot must have told the co-pilot to raise the landing gear, and instead of raising the landing gear, he lowered the flaps. I cannot believe that there wouldn't be a zillion warnings on something like that happening.
Yeah, you got me, Tom. I've never been in a cockpit.
No, I walked by him. That's about it. I don't think I could fit in the chair. There's that, and there's the Minnesota thing. I guess they caught that guy last night, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, they did, yeah.
But how do you see this? I mean, the market was all crazy on what was going on over there on Friday. Well, this morning we're bouncing back, I won't say pretty good, we were down, we're bouncing back pretty good, but we were down, S&P, I think it was down 70, 68 on Friday, and we're back 28, so we're heading in the right direction here, but it's not even halfway at this point. Well, almost. What would make it such a major market event on Friday, and why all of a sudden, even though it seems to be almost intensifying, why do you think today there's a little bit of a relief valve? Is it Iran's, shut off half their stuff and haven't really done much damage, and that's about as far as they can go? Or why would you feel somewhat relieved, though, after Friday's, I'll say, somewhat panic? What's good?
I don't know that I would feel relieved yet. And there's still too much uncertainty. And, you know, the Iranians can do, they could, for instance, try to shut off the Strait of Hormuz, and then the oil flow really slows to a trickle out of that region. So there's still plenty of threats out there, and the Iranians could do something stupid, or, and then their benefit, it could be something smart.
What, I know, for those that don't know, Mike worked a lot in Army intelligence and so forth and knows a lot of this stuff, so don't. We'll talk out of school here, but in terms of the market, last Monday, maybe a week ago Friday, all of a sudden oil, which every morning it's almost, it was too boring for me to talk about. So I'd give the number and I go, I was $61 again today, or 62, somewhere it was just mired right there, it was stuck. All of a sudden it started to creep a little, maybe 7-8 trading days ago. And then after it was up like $2 or $3, somebody says, well, you know, there's increasing tension over there and up another few bucks. Well, now it's like 70-something. Let me get the number today here, but probably it's down a little bit today. It's down 70 cents, but it's $72. Somebody knew this was going to happen, Mike, to some extent. I mean, you know, guys sitting here just trading oil, we don't seem to be privy to that information. Is it, I use the term leaked, or are people just aware, or people realize that the Israelis are buying a bunch of gas for their planes? I mean, how did, I'm not asking you to do an investigation on insider trading, but how widespread, or who has to know for something like this to creep up? I mean, nobody's, I don't think people are getting news out of Iran, but I mean, somehow or another, this was widely known to somebody or somebodies.
Yeah, it did pretty well. Somewhere, it probably started in Israel, Tom. Who knows? Or London, for all that matters, you know.
Yeah, because it was $77 last night when we opened up, down in the market. So some piece of news somewhere between last night and, let's say, 9 o'clock and now has caused oil to back up, really, $3.50, and the market to rally. Was down 29 last night, or 22, so market's turned around $40. Seems like there's another piece of news hanging somewhere, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does. And I guess just the uncertainty. You don't know what the Israelis really want to accomplish, other than they kind of want to wipe off the nuclear infrastructure of Iran.
Well, it could be that there's some view in Israel that we accomplished what we wanted to accomplish, and they haven't hurt us too bad, and I guess we're okay with it. I mean, that could be. That's what happened last time, right?
Well, that could be, yeah. But I don't think Netanyahu is not going to let up. I think he wants really to get rid of that nuclear infrastructure.
Well, how much further can he? He knocked off the 2 or 3 guys there. I was reading this big thing this weekend how he left the leader in place. Did you, I'm not jumping this on you, but somehow or another, his kid is like somewhat second in command. But since he never went to be a real Ayatollah, you have to have gone to and have taught serious religion, for lack of a better term, at like one or two of these colleges over there, religious schools. So it's a big deal to become in whatever religion it is. I mean, put it this way, you don't get to be their pope without being a priest first or something. I mean, anyway, it's pretty complicated. And the kid has not done that. So they said if they would have wiped him out, the crescendo would have been to let the kid wouldn't have to do that, and he could, because of the power vacuum, he could probably become the next Ayatollah real quick, and they think he's even worse. So the Israelis were very careful to leave the guy in power. Did you read any of that?
No, I have not read any of that. I just saw this morning that 4 key officials had been assassinated or taken out, however you want to phrase it.
Well, that's what the article said. It said it could have been 5, but they were very careful to not go after him. Okay. The last thing they want to do is make him a martyr and let the kid become in charge. which is interesting, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it is, actually. I mean, and that's how strong their intel structure is, or their intel services are. So they can target people, very accurately.
It's kind of a... It's going to break, because that's what I wanted to ask you, because Mike was in intelligence. Years ago, I mean, I say years ago, 5-6 years ago, I read this huge expose by somebody. You know, of course, you know, some of my guys will say, who was the guy? But it had to do with, out of all the stuff that, you know, all the wars were familiar with, it really wasn't that hard for Japanese to get intelligence on World Pearl Harbor. It really wasn't that hard for the Germans to have people here. Said one of the hardest things they've ever done during putting people on the ground in Iran was harder than putting people on the ground in Nazi Germany. And if they're secret police and our people don't fit in at all. Just think about it. I wonder if enough people in Iran now want this guy out that maybe we're getting information from, like, essentially an underground there. I don't know.
Well, I think we probably are, Tom. You know, because there's a pretty open underground there. It's unfortunate that it's such a strong theocracy, though. But they've got the backing in the military, so that's a key thing there.
But I don't think you want to be a CIA or a Mossad guy wandering around over in Iran on your own.
I think the Israelis blend in better than we would. So,
well, I'm saying what this article said, them. It has been historically very hard to get boots on the ground there. So I just wonder if the information is coming from internal. Well, whatever. I'm just postulating from somebody who doesn't know anything. Because you're right. The intelligence seems pretty darn good.
Yeah.
Anyway, S&P futures up 31. NASDAQ futures up 131. We're back maybe close to half of Friday. It's not quite there, but sort of. You're right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes, it's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen, front of the board. You know, I just drove by the Joliet Prison last week on the way to a wedding. I don't think it's 106 miles. I think it just sounded good. I think it's more like 80.
Something. It's around the area, you know.
Yeah, yeah. It's close enough. Close enough, eh? S&P futures up 34, and NASDAQ futures up 144. This is a big turnaround. Last night, we were down about 25, maybe. Oil hit 77 bucks. I'm sure that's Brent. It's down to like 72, 73. So whatever massive fear we had, we seem to have abated a little bit. I don't know whether it should be gone, but all the stuff that was going on in the world, maybe the fact this guy got caught in Minnesota might have helped a little too. Whatever it is, we're not as worried as we were last night, and I think that's probably a good thing. Over in Europe, we have, I think we have the DAX up 79.3%. These guys are all down last night. European markets rebound as Israel Iran attacks continue, which is interesting. Renault is down 6%. They don't sell any cars here anymore, do they, Jimmy? I don't think Renault.
Yeah, I do.
In here, in the U.S.?
I don't know about the U.S., but in Europe they do.
Yeah, I don't think they do here anymore.
And by the way, Chief, it wasn't from Joliet. It was from Lake Wazapanani where they were doing. That was when they were at the end there. They're in the tunnel.
Oh, all right.
Driving back.
All right. Mm. There you go. S&P futures up 42. Boy, what a great movie. We'll talk about it in a bit. Up 42, that's 0.5%. CAC ran up 56.7. Friday, just for a review, Dow was down 769, S&P down 68, NASDAQ down 255. So like I say, roughly half on the S&P and NASDAQ. We tried to come back during the day a couple times, and then we sunk off on the close. We're in Asia. We've got the Nikkei up 477. That's 1.3%. The Hang Seng up 168.7. Shanghai up 11.3. Again, I don't know how the Israeli Iran tensions affect those guys all that much. Probably doesn't. Bonds up 1 basis point, 4.44. They've been pretty steady down in here. The 10-year cannot seem to get past 450, which I think people were concerned about. 30-year can't make it through a 5. Not that we want it to either, but that's kind of the big number there. The bond up 1 basis point, 2.57. Japan up 5 basis points, 1.46. That's a big move for those guys. Oil, again, the Brent hit 77 last night. Now it's down 67 cents to 73.56. So that's a over $3 spin. West Texas Intermediate down 76 cents, 72.21. Natural gas up 13 cents, 3.71. Kind of odd for summertime, but RBOB unchanged at 226. Gold was up last night. Now it's down. It's down 13, 34, 39, which is still kind of a two-month high. Silver up a dime, 36.46. A foreign exchange. The dollar has actually rallied a little bit, but still the euro is at 115.7, way higher than it has been, and the pound is at 135.8. So the dollar was down last week. It's come back just a little bit. Crypto up $1,500, 106.883. A lot of stuff there, Matt. What do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Yeah, good morning, everyone. It's currently 6:40 on June 16th, 2025. Let's look at traffic real quick. Inbound on the Kennedy from O'Hare to Jane Byrne Interchange at 35 minutes. Outbound at 43. Inbound on the Dan Ryan from 95th to the JB Interchange at 16. Outbound at 11. Real quick at weather, 65 degrees at Midway and 61 at O'Hare. High of around 86 today here in Chicago with mostly sunny skies. Tonight, partly cloudy and a low of 68. Down in Phoenix, it's a different story, 87 degrees right now. Today, extreme heat warning is in effect, high of 114, gusty with plenty of sun and low humidity. Over to sports, MLB yesterday, White Sox lost to Rangers 2-1. Meanwhile, Cubs beat Pirates 3-2. Sox and Cubs back on Tuesday night, both in Chicago. Sox at 6:40 and Cubs at 7:05. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
The situation, Mike, I can't remember, we have John?
Indeed,
yes. Morning, all.
Morning, Jen. Pile in when you feel like it wasn't that long ago, and I say in terms of years. Boy, we got all kinds of stuff here going this morning. All right, guys downstairs are heading out. It doesn't look like a fire, but those guys do all the expressway work. I wonder if there's a crash, man.
Something like that. We'll look into it.
Yeah. The anyway, Mike and Jen, it was a few years ago where something happened in the Israelis. Knocked out a bunch of stuff in Iran, and Iran came back with the same sort of thing this time. It wasn't as much. And the Israelis sort of said, well, okay, they had to do something. It was some kind of response. It wasn't all that bad. And the thing just died out for several years. Do you think this one's liable to do that, or that was the judgment last night while the market turned around, this might be being close to being it, or what?
Yeah. Go ahead, John.
I saw some coverage last night that there are feelers being sent out that there's a possibility of a wrap-up of this or a ceasefire of some kind soon. And those are always very telling signs, I think, because it either indicates that Israel feels it's accomplished what it's set out to do, or Iran feels that it's better at this point to, stop the trading of missiles back and forth for whatever reason, and that they can't, sustain this much longer too. So it indicates that there's some kind of tipping point that I think was reached. And this is often how things have played out, really, when you think about it. I mean, going back to, the mess in Lebanon 40 years ago, 50 years ago, that things kind of reach a point where you would think this is going to end up in some absolute devastation, for both sides, and it's a pullback. And, traditionally, the Six-Day War in 67 and the Yom Kippur War they're very short when, the Ukraine War into the balance. They're really brief. So I think a lot of this has to do with, reaffirming control at home, like you were saying, Mike, Netanyahu, that he's willing to do this and to beef up his numbers. And it's also a way of testing alliances with the U.S. or with NATO, and that this is a kind of, I hate to say it's just, it's not a shadow war or anything like that, but it does have some of the appearances of being just a testing of the waters, and there's often a very quick wrap-up thing. So I'm not quite sure. It seems to be a pattern now, like you were saying, Tom.
Well, two questions here, well, kind of for Mike, but for you as well. Jim, if he wants to pop in. When you have a situation like this, Mike, where you've got these guys seemingly enhancing, well, by all reports, they're enhancing uranium, they say for peaceful purposes, we say probably not. I'm going to guess we might be right on this one. Yet, it's kind of a long process, and there's been negotiations back and forth. What causes it to get to the point where we got to do something like today? Can't be tomorrow. Can't, maybe should have been yesterday. What is it? Is the timing? I won't say political, but is it? I hope not. It's not. It's not Trump Netanyahu feeling they need to do something. I mean, or maybe they thought they should have done it 6 months ago and they're late. How does the day show up? I guess in military terms, I've always been kind of.
I think that the Israelis track the nuclear industry of Iran very, very closely.
How do you think they do that?
I'm not sure how they do it, but they do. They probably use some of the UN, the IAEA inspections. And Netanyahu's been very consistent about the threat from Iran. He does not want Iran to become a nuclear power. I mean, and whether that was the final, I know that he's been saying for the past year that Iran is very close to developing their own enhanced uranium, and so therefore that he needed to stop it before they do.
Do you think if Iran really wanted a bomb, they couldn't get one? When I say a bomb, I'm talking about a missile or a B-52 to get it someplace. Think they really can't find one? I mean, between Pakistan and all these other places that aren't supposed to have them, supposedly have them?
I would say that the Iranians could get something, particularly out of North Korea, since the North Koreans have been supplying everybody in that area for a while. And the Russians are probably helping them, too, because, instability in the Middle East helps Putin out because it keeps, as you has just said with your report, the price of oil went up, and therefore he gets more money and more leverage in that area.
What would be the, other than, the religion, which maybe be part of it, but the idea that if you have a nuclear device. All right, well, you're either going to threaten with it, okay, with maybe some thought that you might actually use it. You might somehow get one into Israel and set the damn thing off, which I hope never happens. So, okay, you blow up something. I don't exactly know what that gets you. If you go in and suppose you had the planes and you drop 50 of them and nuke the place like you see in a bad movie, I mean, I guess just would you do that to somebody because you don't agree with their religion? I mean, I'm curious as just what, even if they had one, how would they use it, for lack of a better term?
Well, the goal of the Iranian theocracy is to eliminate Israel. So they're going to want to, they will try to do as much as they can to get rid of Israel. And
but, I mean, setting off one when you know Israel's got 50, not so sure that's a good idea, is it?
No, but in some respects, you're not playing with full decks here, we think rationally. I don't know that they do.
By the way, you sound like Lou. Lou always accuses me of using a somewhat of a logical, moral Southside Catholic view of other people, and he says it's just the wrong view.
Well, it you're not dealing with rational actors. Putin, he wants to stay in power, and and every time he negotiates, he wins. And that's where Trump hasn't figured that out yet, that Putin's just stalling. And, he's just going to – it's all about Putin staying in power there. So, and in Iran, it's about the mullahs staying in power. So.
Well, when you say – it's so funny, Mike. Whenever anybody says something today, no matter what it is, politically or just in conversation, I don't know, I'm getting so squirrely as I get older – there's almost like 15 interpretations every word somebody says. Now, you just mentioned that they want to eradicate, I don't know if you use that term, Israel. Does that mean they want them out as a regional power? Do they want them out as a hunk of geography? Do they want every Jewish person killed? I mean, do they want...
I think it would be every Jewish person killed and
really?
No more Jewish state.
So in other words, to say that they don't want them as a regional power and they want some sort of a blended Palestinian-Israeli sort of place there, probably under some theocracy, that's kind of different than everybody being dead, I would hope. Maybe not.
Well, but their goal is the elimination of the State of Israel.
State of Israel, okay.
They are not going to be satisfied until Israel is eliminated.
Well, when you look at the geography, though, Michael... why do they even give a crap? They're 1,100 miles away.
It's just because of the people, I guess.
I mean,
see Israel as being an aggressor there. And I think the fact that Israel is also, a relatively stable democracy in the Middle East, the only one, that, that's a threat to Iran also. Well, it's been a threat to Hezbollah and Hamas also.
Well, I'll ask Jan this because, or Jimmy, if you just listen to the news, wouldn't you swear that they were right next to each other? And then you look at the map and you go, it's like us having a fight with Guatemala. Who cares? I mean, not quite the same, but they're not even close.
It doesn't take proximity to go to war with another nation, as we found with the Spanish-American War, World War One, World War Two, and we've been lucky enough not to have to host most of the destruction from these wars by fighting people who have enough distance between us and them that we don't really have to suffer very much, at least on the home front of these wars.
But when I looked at the map in preparation for this, well, I did it anyway, but for today talking to you guys, first thing that popped into my mind, Mike and John, is, okay, there's two big countries in the middle that used to be in the news. What the hell's going on with Iraq and Syria? They're not even, their name's not even mentioned, and they're right in the middle. What is their status these days?
Well, Mike, do you think that Syria is a a player militarily in any of this?
No, not at all, John. Syria is just ungoverned space, you know, and there might be a little bit of government in the Damascus area, but it's just the Wild West, I think, but that's my opinion.
So their new leader has not been very successful at making it a country again.
No, because you've got too many factors there. The Turks are involved with some of Syria. There's Kurds involved, and then there's the various Syria factions.
Well, when you mentioned that, I went to Google Maps, right? First thing they say was it's 1,100 miles border to border. And they go, if you drive it, it's more like 1,300 miles. I'm thinking, that would be a hell of a trip.
That is a hell of a trip to get across that area.
What do you have to drive, a tank?
Probably.
I don't think you're getting in the convertible and going. What's the status with Iraq? I mean, we pulled people out of our embassy there last Monday, right, or Tuesday? Where do they stand? They have some kind of a leadership, but do they control Iraq, or is it kind of the Wild West too? We just don't hear about it.
No, I don't think it's... I think it's a little better anyways. I think Iraq is, you know, moving toward... stability. But you know, you still got the Kurds. They're not satisfied, so you got kind of an independent state with the Kurds, and then the Shia in basically southern Iraq.
Well, do the people who are the same, what are Iranians? Are they Shia or the other guys?
They're Shia also.
Now, are those guys intimately involved with Iran or no? Or just sort of?
No, I don't think so. Well, the one family was, I forget what the guy's name was, Al-Sadr. He was he had Iran as a sponsor. So, and that's, well, the still the goal of the Iranians was, the Shia Crescent. And they had that all the way into Lebanon as long as Hezbollah was dominant.
So... But two questions here. But God, whenever you're on or wherever he's on, all I do is get the answers. Just lead to more questions. What we started out, I'll say a year ago. You know the times better than me. Those guys had knuckleheads fighting for them down in Yemen. They had Hezbollah was pretty serious, at least most people's minds. They had, like you say, they had a group in Iraq. Now it seems like. Everywhere they are, they're basically getting their ass kicked. I mean, if this was baseball, you got Iran going from second place to last place here pretty quick. It seems to me. Now, what does that do at home, or people just don't know about it? What happened? Those guys look to me like they're not winning anywhere. What am I missing?
Well, but the problem. Well, the theocracy is still in place, and the security services that keep the theocracy are still in place. So, you know, the people of Iran, unfortunately, have very little say in what's going on. They might protest, but those protests will be quelled very strongly. It's not like they could pull off the No Kings protest in Iran. Much as what, you know, folks did all over the nation on Saturday. But you just don't have that level of freedom in Iran that you have in other nations.
But people, the weird part that, Mike, for me is I'm not asking one of those guys that are unarmed and whatever to take a shot. I don't mean that literally. To go demonstrate against these people because they sort of can't, but the country used to be able to do that under the Shah. When somebody tastes a little freedom like
no,
that.
No, the Shah was pretty much, you essentially went from one dominant person to, you know, several with the mullahs, but
they never really had a whole lot of freedom.
No, not at all. Okay. That's one of the reasons why they rebelled against the Shah.
Well, they had more freedom in terms of women burning the burqas and those kinds of things, right? They had
yes, but you know, the Shah was and the Oman, whatever their—I think that was the name of the security service there. They were in, you know, they were definitely in charge.
Well, before Mike was in the army, he used to come to a lot of economics classes with me, and John has been around. What is it? I mean, you look at the stuff going on here. You know, and this is not a political shop. You see hell of a lot of people that can't seem to afford their health care. You see stuff that's happening here that you feel pretty bad about, and wondering if we're going to get a solution ever, or if there is one. Mike, you've been in these places. How the hell does Venezuela, how does Iraq, with a busted up government, and how do they have money that's any good? How do you get on the bus? Do you have a job? Do you get paid? Is there anything in the food store? How does a place even exist? I mean, Venezuela's currency has been worth nothing for 5 years now, and somehow people seem to eat, poop, die, get born. I mean, what's it even like? Is it everything like an old, like a black market, Casablanca type movie? You've been there. What is somebody's normal day in Iraq? Do they get up and go to a job? I have no idea.
I think they probably do, Tom. I don't know. In Saudi Arabia, when we were there, they had markets, predominantly geared toward tourists at the time, although there wasn't much tourism. But, they had the gold markets, and then they have other types of markets. And you have a McDonald's, and one side of the McDonald's is for women and children, and the other side is for men. So,
Any factories and stuff? I mean, you got to make money to go to McDonald's, right?
I don't know about factories. Well, there's plenty of oil industry in those nations, but okay. Other than that, that's all I know about.
I mean, you hear stories of Gaza, okay, and without getting into the politics of it. I look at it and I look at the different stuff, Mike. Maybe you do too, still, because of our economics training. I see a 35-40% unemployment rate on males between 16 and 30, and I sit there and go, no, there's a problem. you don't want everybody sitting around all day hungry and not no place to go. I mean, for God's sake.
That's one of the problems with Africa, Tom, is, particularly northern Africa, there's a huge unemployment rate. Algeria has a problem. Libya had a problem. I don't know about Egypt. Now, Egypt probably has some industry. But they're also, Israel is our biggest ally foreign aid-wise, and then Egypt is up there pretty high also. That's how we've kept peace between Egypt and Israel, is we just keep funding both sides.
Well, that's another, I know those guys have fought a couple times, but what do they, logistically, as Mike Royko used to say, war is, he's got it, we want it, let's take it. What is the natural competition there between Israel and Egypt where they'd want to fight each other, other than religion or something?
It was religion. It's water as a resource,
really?
Oil, and the land. Egypt wanted some of the Egyptian or the Israeli territory. So
they don't want Gaza, though. They don't seem to want that. That's
Chief,
the part.
I'm going to come in. Actually, yeah. It's the other way around. Egypt wanted, the Israelis wanted the Sinai. The Sinai is a huge desert. There's nothing there. But it is a buffer zone between Egypt and Israel. Because that means that Israel can control the Red Sea, and they have one port off of Haifa, off of the Red Sea. That was the base strategic.
Okay.
Is the
Sinai. Jimmy's actually traveled through that area. So.
If you go, there is nothing that grows. I mean, the Sinai is just a huge beach. There is nothing there. It's just a piece of land between the Sinai Canal and the Red Sea. Israel wanted it for that reason, because then it would be harder for Egypt to launch a strike.
Okay, so it's like a buffer zone.
Exactly.
All right. I just wonder my brother Dan's done some work. Mike, you've heard of it. John, you've heard me mention it. When the Arab Spring, that was it, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, when all these revolts started to happen, Dan noticed that it was pretty much corresponding. I mean, it's not like, markets up 50 points as Jimmy walks out of the can. I mean, they're coincidental or not necessarily one causes the other. But he was mentioning that the amount of, was the United Nations, they track world grain prices. And when the world grain prices per day get above the average amount of money people make per day, just seemingly like you get all this unrest everywhere, which I think to us would probably make some sort of sense. I wonder what the worldwide inflation now is doing to percolate some of this stuff in other places. I mean, like we said earlier, almost laughingly, it's really hard to get on the front page, isn't it? I mean, is other stuff going on here, Mike, that we don't even know about?
Yeah, it's, you got me, Tom.
Well, we don't know. I mean, it's hard to question. Is there anything we know that we don't know about? Well, duh. Yeah. But, you know where I'm going with this.
You're starting to sound like Rumsfeld now, Tom.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess my question is you guys know that maybe you don't know, the theme of the show is somehow or another all this, everything we talk about ties together, even though you wouldn't think it does. I mean, is our economic problems end up creating political problems? I think the answer there is yes. Religion somehow fills some kind of a void someplace, but only to a point. I mean, you really can, I think you can look at just about everything that happens is tied into all the other stuff, don't you? I mean, I don't think it's really an independent event, do you?
No, it's all about resources. That's what it comes down to.
Well, go ahead, John.
I'm curious about where Turkey fits into all of this now, because it seems to me that it's likely that, you know, Trump and or Netanyahu have done some kind of assurance, you know, to Turkey where this thing is likely to go in order to prevent them from weighing in on it. But in the last, you know, day or so, it seems that Turkey has started to, you know, make rumblings, let's wrap this thing up, because they're worried about the consequences of a long-term, you know, devastating war with refugees flooding their borders. That they're not interested in. And I think there's been some way of accommodating Turkey in this by saying this is a containable thing that was happening between Iran and Israel. But as long as it is contained, Turkey will stay out of it. If it doesn't go according to plan, I think Turkey is a big player in this. And, is, you know, we have a tenuous relationship at best, I would say. I mean, they're a NATO member, but it's kind of a fractious relationship. So I don't think that, you know, that will bode well if this thing does drag out long enough, because Turkey will stick its nose in. So,
Mike, you ever do any work there? I mean, I know from the economic side, I went through this a few weeks ago. I don't know why, just because I was talking about money supply someplace. They've managed to corral their money supply in the last couple of years. It was growing at, what, 200% a year? They had inflation that was almost Weimar Republic-like. And they've made pretty big strides at corralling that back. I mean, it's still awful, but he had a massive economic problem. Remember
he did, and he's always had a rather tenuous relationship with Israel. He's been kind of an ally to them. But Erdogan, I mean. But he's worried about, just as John said, he's worried about refugees coming in. And Syria is still, you know, as I said before, the ungoverned space. And there's probably a lot of unhappy people in Syria that want to get out. So,
you ever been to or done any work? Talk about the guys that nobody ever cares about. These poor guys in Jordan, don't they have as many refugees as they do people? And somehow or another,
they have a lot of Palestinian refugees in Jordan, but the king keeps a pretty good handle on them. They're kind of stuck out in the middle of nowhere.
How does he manage to feed these people?
Well, that's what the UN agencies are for. So,
is Jordan? I mean, I don't know what the geography over there is. Is Jordan an area that can grow their own food? Do they have any water and stuff?
I think some of the area they can. The Israelis have developed some of that desert using desalinization techniques and irrigation, and I hope that Jordan has done the same thing. But you have two or three huge Palestinian refugee camps in Jordan that King Hussein wants to keep them, you know, under control. So, and he has them out. I'm not sure how they are in regard to major Jordanian cities, but for the most part, I think the Palestinians are out of town, out of sight, out of mind.
Well, isn't one of the biggest complaints that the Israelis have with the Turks, and they put some kind of a dam in one of the rivers that runs through Israel?
Well, that's, you know, that's the big deal in that area is the water. So,
or lack thereof.
But it's more the Iraqis with the dam, because if the water stops going, I think too, and here I'm talking, I don't know, Tom. I can't.
I thought they were fooling around with the Jordan River or whatever. Somebody was, or was it the Tigris or the Euphrates? Somebody put a dam on that upstream in somebody else's country, and it wasn't going through Iraq right or something.
Well, that's probably true, and it could be the Kurds building dams too, for all that matters, because water, you know, is the most precious resource in that area. So.
Well, hey, can we shift? When you mentioned earlier, boy, talking about shifting gears, let's talk 2 minutes on soccer, and then we'll want to talk to John about what's going on in Minnesota and other stuff, which you're welcome to hang on. But when you talk about FIFA, who was the group? Mike, this is a while ago, and Jimmy's another our co-soccer guy. Who's the guy from, was it the Philippines? Not the Philippines. Was he from Singapore that they accused rigging a gazillion soccer events all over the world? Is he dead? Was that part of FIFA? Or is that guy dead, or is that still going on? Or
There's the, always match rigging going on with FIFA, but that's the leadership of FIFA, for the most part, was centered out of Europe. And it was either a Swiss guy or a German. One of those guys was put out of the presidency of FIFA or chairman of FIFA because of the corruption. The World Cup in Doha was the one that kind of probably shouldn't have occurred there, but that was a deal made with the rich people in that area, and that's why that one paid off.
When you say corruption, you're talking about who gets the host sites and those kinds of things, not necessarily rigging a game, right?
No, yes, that's true. Not rigging the game, but rigging, you know, where it's, you know, Qatar, which probably didn't have the infrastructure when they were awarded the games, but they pulled it off. But it's bribes to the leadership of FIFA that as to where things would host.
Sort of like if people paid off the Olympic Committee to get the Olympics.
Exactly.
But this happens. It seemed like it was worse than FIFA, or I'm not accusing the Olympic.
Oh, I think it was worse than FIFA. I mean, it was, you know, some of those leaders in FIFA were, you know, just blatant bribes, and they get wine and dine when they would go visit the country to see what the facilities were like.
Well, it's who's the guy that was at, what tournament? Guy just goes back. Jimmy, you might remember this. Was that the head of it? Was it the head of the Phoenix Open or one of those places? No, it was ahead of the one of the football bowls, where the guy had so much dough, and he was an athlete at one time, but he was going out to dinner so much he was up to like 400 pounds or something. Remember that guy?
No, yeah. I know what you're talking about, but I don't remember the exact guy. But yes,
he had the Black American Express, and they showed his charges on it every night. Was like at some 5-star restaurant somewhere, with somebody. Anyway. Just kind of the nature of corruption. When you brought that up, Mike, it's going to be part of the theme with John here in a bit. Is Mike Madigan just got sentenced to 7.5 years, and I, you're welcome to hang on. But my question to John, I haven't had any one of my attorney friends be able to answer this. How is it? Is this a criminal case for Mike Madigan, yet it's a civil case for Commonwealth Edison? Except for the one lady did get convicted. Okay.
It looks like Commonwealth Edison, as a utility, enjoys some immunity from criminal prosecution. So anyway, I can, you know, make sense out of this, because you would think that the offense, whatever it is, would be the same for all the parties involved. I don't get it at all. I think it satisfies this kind of bloodlust to get somebody out who's, you know, stayed too long in the Senate and had too much control. But you know, for Commonwealth Edison to kind of, you know, live to fight another battle in all this is what gets me. If the attempt was to stop this from happening in the future, this will have absolutely zero effect.
Yeah, it almost comes out to, this is, we got four nice Catholic boys here talking about corruption and morality. So it's kind of a one-sided conversation when you say, but when you talk about stuff like this, you almost wonder when does I use the term human nature become corruption? And does everybody have their own line there, or if somebody wants to make a name for themselves and somebody has a big name like Otto Kerner, like Ryan or whatever, or Madigan, if you put them in jail, does that solidify the rest of your life as an attorney or what?
It's kind of a cheap shot if that's what the goal is, I think, because that's small recompense for taking an 82-year-old guy and putting him in jail for the rest of his life. I think the signaling is wrong in that there's a lot younger people and more crooked people than Madigan who are, you know, out walking around and continue to walk around. It's just that Madigan was too big a target, I guess, for people to walk away from, and they wanted to get him.
I wasn't sitting there at trial. I believe the major complaints against him was that in return for favors for Commonwealth Edison, he got jobs for other people at Commonwealth Edison. I don't think there was ever an allegation of some huge envelope, was there? So
no.
So what? And the allegation was that the people he got the jobs for either didn't show up or didn't work very hard. Who the hell exactly monitored that?
Yeah, and some of them, I think, weren't they just interns?
Yeah.
Ships? These were not like, you know, big players, people collecting big checks and weren't doing anything, or ghost payrolling kind of stuff. This looks like, you know, pretty small stuff by comparison to me.
Well, my, Mike, I don't know, you're probably the one that hasn't heard this story, but when I was I took two classes with George Stigler, who was behavioral economist and a governmental economist. And one day someone, you know, George Stigler went on to win a Nobel Prize. He wasn't a Nobel Prize winner yet when I was there. And one of the guys asked him in class, he goes, how do you stop corruption in Chicago? And he said, well, Chicago's kind of a special case. He goes, but then he goes, no, but it's not really a special case. It's the way it is all throughout human history. He says, you got an alderman, you pay him next to nothing because you know he's taking money on the side. And when he takes money on the side, you're pissed off at him. He goes, it's kind of a no-win situation for everybody. He goes, if you want him to not be corrupt, you pay him a real lot of dough, you put half his salary in escrow that he only gets year by year if he's not convicted of anything, you can stop corruption tomorrow if you want to pay for it. He goes, but you can't be in the middle. You know, my question is, if you're Mike Murphy or Jim Lawler and you say, wow, I want to put this building up, here's the building codes, but boy, I don't really want those building codes to apply to me. Well, who's the head of the zoning committee? Well, it looks like to me like it's Ed Burke. Well, I'm going to have one of my guys talk to Ed, who would talk to anybody. I mean, he was a good friend of Audrey's uncle. I'll talk to Ed. Hey, I got this building. The building code looks like it's six stories, but you know, I really need it to be seven. How do we get a zoning variance? Because for those that don't know, in Chicago, isn't that virtually all the things that are passed in the council are zoning variances in one ward or another, that everybody votes for everybody else's zoning variance, right? As long as it comes out of the zoning committee. So, I mean, you know, I'm not saying they're wrong or right. I'm just saying that that's a lot of what they do. So you're going to say, now, essentially, I need a favor from you. Now, Ed Burke's firm also does tax work for people. You could say, or he could drop the tax firm's card on the table and say, well, okay, well, I'll try and work this through for you. It makes sense. By the way, my firm does tax stuff. There's a few other guys that do. If you want, I'll give you the names. Talk to everybody. You know, pick who you like, but at least give us a shot. Give us a chance. I'm going to say most people would say, since alderman's a part-time job, that might be okay. Some people might say it shouldn't be okay, but then again, alderman is a part-time job. But my question to you guys is, if there's no quid pro quo whatsoever, why the hell should Ed Burke even talk to this guy? Hey, buddy, put your application in everybody else. Get out of here. I mean, there are people, I guess, who would walk in and say, I really, my buddy Mike Murphy just got thrown out of the Army. I surely need him to get a job. He's a good friend of mine. Okay, we'll get him a job. By the way, you don't mind being a precinct captain for a while, do you? Well, hell no, I'm not going to be a precinct captain. Well, I've got a couple of tickets here for some judge I like for his benefit, or I'm not buying that. Screw you. I mean, with this, in human events, you know, there's always a little something for something, right?
Yeah.
And I, out of all the things that Mike Madigan could have got, and I have my own problems with Mike Madigan, but out of all the things he could have done, getting a job for somebody else is not exactly high on my pecking order, right? Or should it be? You know, how do you define corruption at that level? I mean, it's you know, I give you a really stupid example, Mike and Jan. One of the last few times I played golf was in this stack outing, right? I got all these guys that are, you know, getting up there. And I'm, you know, I hadn't played in a while, so my back is killing me about the 15th hole. Hey, you guys look like you're doing pretty good. Well, we all dropped 4 ibuprofen 4 holes ago. I'm going, oh, really? I mean, now, that's, I don't think that's a banned substance, but it's not exactly going through on your own either, is it? I mean, where do you draw the line on this stuff? Can a baseball player who's having a, you know, his arm's hurting him a little bit, can he take 10 aspirin? Or that's okay, but some, or should it be nothing? I mean, it's really hard to make these rules, isn't it?
Yeah, you could go through every office, you know, every person assistant to the city council in Chicago, every county position, every state position, and find evidence of this and worse, of, you know, somebody being recommended for some position for whatever, you know, the pay may be, or some kind of perk, so they can put it on their resume. And this is how politics have always worked. And I don't think there is a single public official that has, you know, turned away from this or refused to participate in it that I know of. So this is kind of amusing that, you know, when things start to, you know, rise to the surface in a high profile case like the Madigan one, that everybody, you know, assumes this is something pretty important. And I think it's so mundane, it's almost laughable. And yet this was the decision to, you know, make this into a big stink. And, you know, the fact that Commonwealth Edison is, you know, pretty much untouched by this, really, for whatever they did and whatever else they benefited from, you would think they would be in there with Madigan and some kind of criminal charge, but they're not. So,
well, you know, he was, again, I don't know if there's a crime necessarily here. Mike, do you remember from your business courses how people factor receivables? You remember that term? Mike still with us? Or did he pile off? He must have piled off. Well, Jimmy, you know that term. For those that don't know what that is, if you do some stuff for somebody, whether it's a service or you send them goods, usually when you go to get paid, you'll say what? It's a, you know, 210 net 90 or something. Now, for somebody to know what the hell that means, it means if you pay in 10 days, you can take 2% off. Otherwise, you got 60 or 90 days to pay me. Right? But now, if your business is busy, you need the money quicker than 90 days, because most people, the reason why most businesses go out of business is not because of profit, they go out because of cash flow, right? So you really want the money faster. So most people have a factoring relationship with the bank that, if it's, you know, whatever, if it's Amazon that owes you the dough, they got a credit rating, that's fine. You transfer that debt, that receivable, to a bank, and you pay them a certain amount of interest for the 90 days, but you get your money up front. So if the interest is, say, 12% a year, and your rate of return on the stuff that you're making is 20% a year, you want to factor your receivables, right, guys? I mean, because you don't want your money sitting dormant someplace in somebody else's place. So the trick there is the bank essentially takes over the note, so Amazon now owns the bank. So you're home free from the deal. Well, the state of Illinois, for years and years, they were on this cash basis accounting where they kept saying they had a balanced budget, but they really didn't. They just didn't pay anybody. So that's why when the next fiscal year came about, everybody got their check. All right, so it was all screwed up. But the state would only, so if that's why most small pharmacies are out of business, right, guys? Because they never got their money from the state on the Medicaid stuff. So the idea would be, if those guys could factor their receivables, they could do that. Well, the state only allowed 2 or 3 firms. You could only use those 2 or 3 firms. You couldn't use anybody else. So you couldn't just go to the First National Bank of, you know, Bolingbrook or someplace and give it to them, because the state would not attach the receivable to the bank. Well, Michael Madigan had one of those firms. And the state paid like 12% on this, John, some huge number. So that dude made more money on that than he ever did screwing around with Commonwealth Edison. Not even close, in my opinion. I mean, the idea of getting a couple of jobs here and there, who cares? Like you said, what's the difference? And how does Commonwealth Edison's been doing this for how many years? 100 and well, some?
As long as there's been a Commonwealth Edison.
And do you think they stop now? They're giving the new guy money. The new guys.
Yeah.
I mean, how do we go from place to place and never... And what do our kids think when they look at this stuff? Is there no definition? If there's no one in it, doesn't seem to be any morality. I mean, there was, in our day, a job for Uncle Joe was worth a precinct captain and whatever, something. Working a poll on elections. It wasn't worth $100,000. It wasn't worth $5. There was kind of a, I'll use the term, price on all this. Oh, by the way, Uncle Joe had to show up for work, right?
Yeah,
generally.
Yeah, generally. Somehow, in the midst of this whole mess, we're kind of replacing the old system, but what exactly is the new system? Does anybody even know?
No. Well, you know, the example of the old system, which, you know, in many ways was a good system. I mean, right after I moved to this neighborhood back in the 90s, I wanted to get, you know, another garbage can because we're short a garbage can, what we should have had. So I just called the streets of sanitation, said who I was, the address, and they dropped off a new garbage can. So that was, you know, end of the story for me. And then shortly after that, when there was canvassing going on for the next election, the precinct captain, who I hadn't met, you know, rang the bell. I was talking to him, and he said, and he knew that I had requested, you know, a garbage can without going through him. And I, you know, I didn't. Of course, I wasn't paying particular attention to the protocol. I just wanted a garbage can.
Oh, yeah, that's where you're wrong. You can't just do that.
Oh, yeah, and he, you know, he gave me a very nice, I mean, it was a perfectly reasonable conversation, but he said, in the future, you know, when you've got an issue, that's what I'm here for. Thinking about it later, I said, well, here's a guy making a pitch for wanting to do more work. But he wanted to people higher up to be aware that he was the point person and that he wasn't just disposable or, you know, shirking his duties. And I thought, well, that's what you would want in any kind of a public servant. You know, whatever he's getting in the way of perks for being precinct captain, he's trying to justify doing work and, you know, ingratiating himself with the public in a way that, you know, most of the employees couldn't care less about.
Well, that is what he's supposed to do. He's supposed to get the call, and so you don't call the alderman directly. You call
right, them. To keep them out of it. Yeah. I'm here to run interference for them. And I mean, you know, it's perfect sense. I wasn't thinking in those terms, and I wasn't trying to make a big case out of it either, but it solidified, you know, my friendship with him after that, and I understood where he was coming from and what he must have thought of me going around the system here. So, but that's a good kind of patronage system. It's the goal is to get things done and to involve as few people as possible. So,
one of the guys that shows up once in a while for the Tooman night, the judges said he grew up in Marquette Park, right? He said, well, it was interesting. My parents had an interesting marriage. My dad was a precinct captain, and my mother was like the chairman of the Better Government Association or something.
What if they had food fights at the dinner table?
He goes, because they got along pretty good. He goes, despite that, they got to let him talk about that. I go, okay. But now you see it on the federal level. And, you know, without getting into a political discussion, the last couple of administrations have taken this to a new level to where I don't think people have any idea where these lines are anymore. I mean, Trump has people show up. He's having White House tours for people that invested in some of his Bitcoin stuff while he's supposed to be president. Well, a lot of people don't seem to have any problem with that. I'm sitting there going, it's way over my line, but they're not asking me. All these people have chased money all over the world, and yet, you know, the president's son was doing it. You know, that would never happen on my watch. Neil Bush was on the board of the Silverado. I thought that was way over the line. But they're not asking us, John. Is there a line, or is it you push it as far as you can go? And
well, they're not asking, and they're not listening to any possible objection to it either. So, you know, everybody has to, you know, accept this at some level, and it's above your pay grade to fight it. So,
well, my line is, if somebody gets a job ahead of maybe somebody else, if it's kind of a crummy job to start with, and the guy shows up and does a decent job, it's not something I really want to go after. I mean, maybe that's just my Chicago roots. But if it's government money, those kinds of things, well, no, I got a problem a little bit with it. Yeah. But, I mean, everybody knows that one of the ways you kind of stop corruption is, again, I learned a lot of this stuff from the University of Chicago, and then, of course, I don't think any of those guys ever influenced anybody, did they? But, I mean, if you have a highway bid and the it's a straight bid, John, and the person, whatever the going rate is in terms of profit on a highway, I would say, if you know what all your materials are and you know what all your hours are and there's no changes, if it's a $200 million job and you make 20, I'm going to say 10%. Pretty good, and maybe even a little high, right? I'll bet it's more like 7 to 10. If it's somewhat surety, what the guy wants to make. If it goes out for bid, and that's what the going rate is, and that's what somebody makes. If a guy like Jim Lawler calls up and says, "I need, 50 tickets at $500 a pop for my buddy's kid's judgeship," the guy on the phone is going to say, "Because you guys have gotten so lean, I don't have that kind of money to give back." Right? That's the defense of it. But if you know, and, you know, we have some mayors here that I used to talk to, if you know that everybody gets 20% more than they're supposed to get because it's half-ass rigged, I know as mayor, I actually have money in everybody else's pocket that I can call on at any time, right? And if I call up John Flanagan and say, "I need 10 of these tickets, and you just made $30 million on a highway job you were willing to make 15 on," you know, and I know, there may not be a whole 15 there, but there's five that's really mine, right?
Yeah.
How do people get in power these days don't seem to have any of these knowledge of how this works or used to work? Because people don't change, do they?
No. Yeah, it's... This has never changed. This has always been, you know, quid pro quo, pay to play. It's as old as politics.
But some of it, you are asking somebody a favor. Why shouldn't Eddie Burke go out of his way to care about your building being six or seven stories?
Right. Why should he even give you an appointment?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not saying everything should be a quid pro quo, but it has to be good for the neighborhood, not screw the neighborhood. No, wait a minute. You want 40 stories instead of six? Where the hell is everybody going to park? What's the matter with you? There's got to be some governor on it, right? Of some sort of common sense. There's got to be something. And, you know, I think where Eddie got himself in trouble was that you have to use my tax firm or else I'm not doing anything for you. He got to that stage. Maybe he just got old or what. And that's how I think he got caught. But that's just me.
Well, it's really, you know, it's a monopoly system at that level. Because if the
yeah,
only
there's
way
two or three of them. There's a few of them.
Yeah, but I mean, but it's they're all pretty much in the same, both politically and familial, you know, family connections.
Yeah.
This is, you know, how it's always worked, and nobody expects anything for nothing. This is capitalism. You know, it's not they're not about giveaways. You know, helicopter money all the time. You actually have to do something in order to earn recognition or to get a seat at the table. So it makes sense why, you know, in any kind of a city council situation, an older person would take the phone call of a big business owner in the ward, and somebody else they never heard of, you know, have no clue who they are or why they're calling, to put them off or take a message. This is basic politics, you know. If you want an officially run system, you got to decide who do I have to talk to? Who can I talk to tomorrow or next week?
You got to watch your beak.
Yeah.
SP Futures up 42, NASDAQ Futures up 184. After break, we'll talk our usual Monday real estate stuff. We also got to give a couple of minutes to this Minnesota thing, which, thank God, we They caught the guy in very non-violent, hey, too, huh, John? No policeman got hurt. He's not hurt.
The waters are get muddier and muddier, though, because it's two targeted hits, you know, where people who voted on the opposite sides in this contentious vote on health care for immigrants. So go figure.
I thought it was an abortion thing.
Well, there were people on his hit list who were, abortion rights advocates. But the immediate connection with the assassination of Melissa Portman was that she had voted in a high-profile vote against the Democrats to repeal health care for illegal immigrants. And the motion, passed. And in the Senate, John Hoffman, the other person who survived the assassination attempt, had voted not to repeal health care for illegal immigrants.
Well, I don't want to get into a political black hole here, but somewhere between the legislative stuff and the stuff for illegals, it is broadening out, John. I don't know if it's because of the right-wing TV or whatever. It's broadening out that if you're not a citizen, you don't deserve any health care. And I've heard that from like five people in the last 2 weeks, and I'm appalled by it, because there's got to be 15, 18 million people here that aren't citizens that have lived here for 10, 20 years paying taxes like everybody else. We're going to deny them health care now? And what are we doing here? It is expanding from somebody who swam across the river last week and is here totally illegally to somebody who's been here 15 years and it hasn't been a citizen. That's a stretch. And a lot of people are in round two already of this, and I don't even know if they know what they're talking about, but... Well, SPV is up 39, NASDAQ is up 174. Be right back.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here.
All right, brain. You don't like me and I don't like you. But let's just do this and I can get back to killing you with beer.
Hello, my big Stocks and Jocks. Matt, we needed you last week. The We didn't have anybody to put up. We finally got some Beach Boys up on Friday. We never did get any Sly and the Family Stone.
We can get some of that. Yeah, play us out with that.
Yeah, why don't you play us out with that? You gotta teach these other guys how to do this. they're not as nimble. Matt is really quite good. Hey, how many awards did you end up getting when you were at the other station?
Oh man, I think it was about four. I just had to tally it up recently for a recommendation letter. So yeah, it's about four.
Well, tell everybody what you got real quick, because we have Audrey or we have Nancy? I think we might have Audrey.
I believe Audrey today, yeah.
Just give us a... Matt did all kinds of rewards. He's not just hanging here doing stuff for us. What did you get?
Well, I got an award. First award I got was I put together the nomination for... it was Harper Radio. So it was all of our... It was all of our work we've done there. And we won Best Community College Radio Station when I was program director.
Wow.
And that was 2023. Let's see, what was it? BEA, the Broadcasting Education Association, last year won for a promo I did, and Richie, who also does the show here, got first place. He had a really great promo that I also voiced on. And then this year, won for another first place at the Broadcasting Education Association Festival of Media Arts, and then also at the Intercollegiate Broadcast System Awards. So yeah.
Hey,
bunch
good for
of,
you.
Bunch of awards, too
but,
many awards.
But Ricky was part of one of them? Good for him.
Yeah, he got, last year he got a Best of Festival nomination, which got him like a $1,000 prize. Yeah, good stuff for him.
Yeah, he deserves it.
Absolutely.
What do you think of that, Odd? We got guys here that win stuff.
Sometimes, yeah.
We're lucky we have them.
Yeah, that's, we got some winners here. Hey, so John, just to let you know, the losers I'm hanging around with, last week when the guy with the air crash, as bad as that was, have you ever seen anything like this in your life where the one guy walked away?
I couldn't believe that.
Well, obviously, John figures his job isn't done here yet. He's got things to do.
So I, of course, since he's seat 11A, by the way, it's got to be the most popular seat to get on a plane now, right?
I would figure it wouldn't be, because once is a, you only get one shot like that, so you might as well sit anywhere.
Well, plus it was a window seat, which I guess I wouldn't have guessed. But so I, of course, said to everybody, hey, let's all throw in a bunch of dough, $5-$10 a piece. Let's go grab the daily lotto. I'll pick a bunch of numbers. We'll start every one of them with 111. A being 1 and 11, and everybody looks at me like I got five heads. So we never did it. Just saying. These are the kind of guys I'm hanging around with. What can I tell you?
Well, it was next to the exit door, wasn't it? That's how he was able to walk out.
Okay. It was right there.
Okay, so he was able to push that out.
Get those exit seats. I'll pay extra for those any day.
Well, the guy next to him didn't make it, though, eh? Evidently, that's pretty scary. Hey, 2 minutes on the thing in Minnesota. The guy's caught. Nobody seems to know why, although he left a whole list of people. His guys he roomed with said that he didn't like Pelosi and a couple people on the national stage, but he never even mentioned any of these other people.
Hmm.
That's weird, huh?
Yeah.
How did the guy go and shoot people, and then all of a sudden his car is getting towed away, and he made it to the night? He must have had. Did somebody help him? I mean, there's a million questions on this.
Yeah, there's supposedly two suspects. That was the first thing I heard. That went away. I mean, that was the same story kind of with the Oklahoma City bombing, if you remember, Tom, in 1995.
Yeah.
There were all these accomplices who right away the FBI just said, don't worry about them. You know? They went off the wanted list and were never really talked about after that. So there's always been a flurry of misinformation in a lot of these high-profile cases where I still can't make head or tails out of what really happened and exactly how law enforcement got alerted to this. It's one of the most garbled accounts. All these are garbled, I guess, at some level, but I don't know what the reason for any of it is. I don't know if this is actually the guy they have on that ring doorbell. He doesn't look like the same build of a person at all. It looks like he's much shorter, much slighter and trimmer. So I don't really trust any of this coverage now. I think law enforcement has to get somebody in custody, and this guy apparently was cooperative. So I just, and they caught him in his hometown, where you would think he's probably been up since all this happened. Boy, I just think it's odd that we had 48 hours of a manhunt, and he ended up right where he should have been all along.
Well, they pulled the wife over. Didn't she have ammunition and guns and said she knew nothing, too, or something? They let her go?
And passports, too, yeah. And they let her go, so they didn't detain her. It's something weird about the whole thing, though.
It's pretty nuts. But what's going on in the real estate world? Nancy was saying with the interest rates kind of back up a couple of weeks, it kind of fell on its butt again. But now they were down a little last week. Now today they're back up a little bit. We're right in the same spot. The 10-year's in this 4.4 to 4.5 range, can't seem to move. And the 30-year is the 4.9 to 5 and kind of runs the 5, backs off, runs the 5, backs off, but it's kind of stuck there. So mortgage rates got to be pretty much stuck. Where are they, like almost 7, 6.8 or something?
Some people are running 6.5, 6.75, maybe 7. It depends a lot on your credit score, too. So anybody who's looking to get a house, check your credit score before you start the process, because that's going to make a big difference in the rate that you're going to be able to lock down. But actually, mortgage rates were up 12%. Mortgage applications, excuse me, were up 12% in the area last week. So it is home buying season, and this is January to June is usually the biggest rush of the year, and we're still in that time frame, and people want a house. And if you want a house, this is the current rate, and most people are just getting their house if they can find one, because the inventory is still low.
Well, is there any slanting?
Refinance down the road a little bit.
Is there any slanting towards condos, townhouses, houses? Are people looking for townhouses so they can, let's say, you know, keep the maintenance costs at least even? Or are people doing that for condos? Or
people will get what they can afford in the lifestyle they'll want to live. It doesn't. A lot of times a first-time buyer, that will come more into play as far as what they can afford. Or a lot of times you'll get seniors who are looking to downsize with less care. But it depends. I mean, how people want to live their life as far as money. Also, you know, a lot of times seniors are snowbirds and they want to be gone in the winter. And having a nice townhome or condo usually makes life a little easier if you don't have to worry about that upkeep. You can lock the door and go. So depends on what your lifestyle is and what your preference is at that point.
Well, it is a lot easier if you live in a high rise. If you want to go away for a month, to just lock the door rather than worry about rain in the gutters and all the other stuff you have to do if you're a homeowner, right?
So, it doesn't have to be a high rise. It could be anything, right? With an association, a ranch, townhome, anything where it's somebody else's responsibility. You just have to worry about the inside.
Well, when I had my high rise, Jen, the beauty of it was they didn't care if I was there and I didn't care if I was there. But then again, it wasn't exactly home either. So you know, everything sort of has a trade-off. But is there
too many people in one place for me?
Well, without getting political about it, let's say it appears in the last, other than the COVID money, which appears to be gone, states are getting a little less sort of support for some programs out of government. Now, there's been a lot of the, I mean, we've talked about it on the show, I don't want to go into it too deep, but the last couple of years, when the federal government deficits have ballooned, some of that money has gone to states and munis, whether it should have or it shouldn't have, you know. So if you looked at the overall picture over the last decade of government owing dough, I'm not so sure that the total is as bad as the federal piece, but without going into all that, it seems like going forward, maybe the money coming from the feds is going to dry up a hair. This appears to be my summary of the politics, whether they should or they shouldn't. And your state taxes and local taxes might be going to creep up faster than they have been, which I hope they don't, but if they do, when somebody like Nancy or you or your clients pile into a house, it seems to be a fairly common theme from you and Nance. A lot of people, when they've done with the mortgage, are right up the edge, their balls against the wall, basically, on their money. Are people anticipating taxes going up 2%, 10%, 12%, or nobody even thinks about it? I know our buddy Shanny was on the show, and maybe back because he's our oil expert. Now he's downtown, but he was saying that his taxes in Glen Ellen, they were up 9% last year, and since 2000, they're up 40% or something. Is that what do people in your industry I won't say ignore it. Is it a cause of conversation, or just it is what it is, and you just deal with it?
Well, I think that's one big reason people are leaving Illinois. I mean, why would you pay taxes here when you go across and live in several other states where taxes are a lot more reasonable? That's why Indiana is flourishing. You know, they're hell-bent on giving people in Illinois crappier service and higher taxes and terrible schools, failing school districts in the city. So there's not real incentive. If people could move elsewhere, it's getting to the point where California, where the U-Hauls are going to be greater leaving than coming in. So,
well, your new internet is better, but it's still not like it used to be. You're still kind of up and down a little bit. But you were the person who sounds and looks just like you, said that 3-4 years ago you basically, I won't use the term help, but people were moving to Indiana and you took care of their house here and so forth. And it was a real, not only were the taxes cheaper, but the houses were a lot cheaper. Didn't you tell me that a lot of that's evened up, the houses and stuff?
Yeah, well, that's another supply-demand issue. You know, people from Illinois want to live close to the border still. So a lot of those communities, you know, St. John, Chesterton, everything along the border there has really flourished and grown. So, you know, Illinois keeps it up. They're just going to get in worse and worse shape.
Has that new rail line in there? I don't hit you with this question without asking in advance, but is that new rail spur to the South Shore down into further south, and the fact that the South Shore has been really updated, has that helped those areas, or too soon to tell?
I don't think it's going to make a bit of difference. I think people who live out there are going to drive.
Okay, well, that train gets a lot of people on it. I mean,
don't
even,
yeah, that, but I don't think that's tied to where a lot of people are moving.
Okay, so it's not a big thing yet.
Not to any of my clients, sir. They want their cars.
Well, they want their tolls. They're getting them, right?
Well, that's why they have side streets.
What? Go ahead, John.
Audrey, are you still seeing the phenomenon where the high taxes in the south suburbs are keeping a lid on house prices, just because, you know, there's no way somebody can afford a mortgage and the taxes? So as a result, these properties tend not to enjoy some of the other, you know, increases in value and prices that you see in other places.
You know, we have had a big run up out here, and again this spring there was another. I believe it was, we had a 14% jump in prices this spring. It was very quick and very fast, because, you know, this is, you know, it's beautiful out here in a lot of places. Just our suburbs are beautiful. You have the amenities. So, and there's still, again, the low inventory. So prices are steady. The only thing, John, that I'm seeing, again, as we've talked about, is something that's not show-shaped, ready to go, HGTV quality, is going to get sick for a while and get some reductions. But multiple offer situations still getting bid up. I had a house that went 20,000 over list, you know, in a lower price range in the 300s, that got bid up 20 over list, so that is still there.
That's encouraging. Yeah.
Well, and I think, not to interrupt you guys, but John was referring to the, you gave an answer regarding southwest suburbs. He was talking about the further east places where your Flossmoors of the world and your Olympia Fields, where the houses are going for two something and the taxes are 20 grand a month, that kind of thing. Is there any backup on that or no?
You know what? I don't follow that market as much. I do know somebody who purchased a home in Flossmoor, and the taxes were like $1,000 more than their mortgage payments. So you might get this beautiful home for, let's just say, something that would be, let's say they bought it for $200, that would be $450 or $500 here, but your taxes might be $15,000 to $25,000. It's very, very skewed for them. But they don't have a lot of business out, and there's no, their tax base is skewed. So, like Country Club Hills, they have extremely high taxes. So that's a problem. You get a great bargain on the house, but the taxes are killing people.
What was it? Yeah. You had that listing in Chicago Heights, and wasn't the house worth like $65,000 and the taxes were $500 a month or something?
Yeah, it was crazy. So that is really tough in some of these poorer communities where people can get a house, but the taxes are high, and then they bump up just a little higher. And people who are just barely getting by on the house, every little dollar is budgeted. And, you know, these little communities, again, they need to rethink what they're doing or try to keep people, you know, in retail, let them retain their home ownership. It's very difficult. It's a very tough situation here. Nobody politically seems to want to address it.
What happened out there? Didn't a couple of the big malls close or something in some of those areas? Well, that's what happened in Evergreen Park. Evergreen Park was...
The Matson Mall closed years ago. That was a long time ago. Remember that?
Well, yeah, a lot of factory closures. You know.
A lot of factory, a lot of the steel mills, manufacturing. Gee, what else is out on the east side? The rail?
Yeah. Well, I mean, where we grew up was Evergreen Park, and Evergreen Park it sounds like it's in the suburbs, but it was surrounded on three sides from Chicago, so it's kind of an Illinois phenomenon. You get a suburb that's actually in the city, but our taxes were always cheaper than Chicago because Evergreen Park had the Rubloff's first place. Evergreen Plaza was this huge, incredibly successful mall before we even knew what a mall was, with a couple of anchor stores and.
It was the first indoor mall.
Was the first outdoor mall, and then they closed it. It was outdoor long before it was indoor. But anyway, so all of a sudden the plaza kind of goes under, Carson goes under, Montgomery Wards goes under, and the place is kind of a nowheresville, and they now have a Myers and a Walmart there and a Menards, but I think those guys cut such a deal. I don't think they're paying anywhere near as much as the plaza used to. And all of a sudden, the tax in Evergreen Park are a lot higher than they're in Chicago, right? Right on.
Yeah,
they've totally spun from being cheaper to higher. Now your schools are better in Evergreen Park, probably. But I mean, it's now all of a sudden it's a big difference in taxes. So yeah, it's an issue. But then you go to some of these other states, and the property taxes are less, but other stuff's higher. So I mean, it's really hard to find. I had one once. I told you about this years ago. I found this thing on the internet where they took every single state and did the entire taxation. And it's not as obvious as you think. Wisconsin's no cheaper than Illinois, right? I don't think it is.
No, but I think they have a lot of their systems are way better than ours.
Well, I mean, even places like Wyoming or places, I think it was Wyoming, everybody goes, God, you got to go there, it's cheap. Well, God help you if you croak there. You know, their dying tax is to the moon. Yeah, their estate tax is to the moon. So you really, before everybody just, I mean, Odd's correct. Some states are a lot better on some stuff, but they're not, you got to be careful. They're not all better on everything. I mean, even Indiana.
Well, that's why people for different stages of their life will look at different places and why the seniors will, you know, have an exodus to where their life is going to be better and a lot of their earnings aren't taxed as much.
Well, Illinois does not tax Social Security benefits, which most states do. So there is something to be done here. But so what if you had to put a 5-year prognosis? The new houses that are going up by you, they're all selling, right? That guy's got that big development.
Yeah, but that's things are going well. People have been buying homes. Household formation is up again. People have to live somewhere, so they're going to make adjustments. Not people don't. Renting is so expensive with no equity, so people want to get a foothold somewhere somehow. And again, these more expensive developments, so for seniors especially, people want to stay by their kids and grandkids, so they don't want to move way out. They want to stay in their areas where their services are familiar to them, their communities are familiar. So there's a lot of things driving that too.
But your area, your growth, I think has been somewhat balanced by the fact that you guys never went crazy in the first place, right? So I mean,
well, Orland grew over time.
That's what I'm saying. You never had the run up where stuff went from 300 to a million, and then all of a sudden the factory leaves you come flying down. You guys have been pretty steady the whole way. That's why.
Yeah. It's been Southwest suburbs are, you know, they've been pretty well managed. It's been a good growth rate. There's a lot of diverse community. There's something for everybody. So I think basically all in all, Palos, Orland, Mokena, all these suburbs are very well managed, well run.
We had Odd has a lot of good friends that are my friends as well. And one of her friends who she met on the trading floor has been in the liquor supply business for a long time and does very well. And we had breakfast with her yesterday, and Jen, a lot of her places are on the east side, right? You know, kind of areas that you wouldn't necessarily want to go. And it's really something. I mean, I drive, you know, through the south side a lot more than maybe I should, but I mean, she was regaling us with how many of the liquor stores you can't even go in, or everything's behind bulletproof glass, and you know, it seems like nobody has a job. You know, you pile in a parking lot and there's 40 people hanging out there doing God knows what. I mean, the areas that I go through on the south side, or they might be minority neighborhoods, but they're regular houses, and most of the people seem like the house is being kept up, and it, you know, it doesn't look all that horrible. But she goes to these areas. How bad are some of these areas? I did have to drive through the west side because the Eisenhower was closed a few weeks ago, and I had dinner with a client going down Lake Street. It looks like it did after the King riots. Nothing has come back. I've not been in any of these really, really bad areas, except a couple times I've taken the train. How bad is it? I mean, is it just that horrible?
Well, there are stretches where it's you know, as bad as it ever was. Other places where there's, you know, signs of life, like Woodlawn and, you know, the south end of Hyde Park, there's been construction, you know, of new homes. 63rd Street, which used to be, you know, a beat-up street like Lake Street, with the L running overhead, and just, you know, awful atmosphere, you know, just, you know, crime all over the place. Now that the L's gone, the street's now been, you know, everything's demolished, and you got these little, you know, homes, nice picket fences and lawns out in front. I can't believe when I drive down 63rd Street, this is the 63rd Street of 50 years ago. It looks much better. But then there are other stretches that were flourishing 50 years ago that have just collapsed. So I would say on the whole, it's a lose-lose prospect right now for a lot of the South Side, more than, say, 20 years ago. I just saw a figure the other day for somebody to afford a median-priced home in Chicago now, you need $110,000 salary a year. And that's hard for one person. It's still hard for two people these days, really, when you're thinking about job stability. So I see that, you know, a huge, you know, barrier to home ownership and in an area like Chicago, where you got, you know, a job market that is, you know, nothing like it used to be, and you got empty land all over the place, and you got people who need places to live, and yet the idea of owning a home is kind of beyond them.
Well, funny you should mention that, John. We got a couple minutes here. Aud and I had this discussion in 2008. I can't find the article. I know it's here someplace. Some dude did a might have been a lady. I don't know. I did a 3 or 4 page study, and in 2007 or 8, the median home was 235. So if somebody gave you the $47,000 down for your 20% mortgage, you needed $85,000 a year to afford that house. This is 2008, and only 15% of the population made $85,000 a year. Of course, you can pile in and say there's two people working, but then when you have two people working, you're paying child care, you're paying all the rest of the stuff. So you don't get the whole of the second salary, whoever it is, right? But right. They went through a routine. If you work in the, I think it was the, you know, food service business, you're 18. If you're in the, a normal person sitting in a cubicle in 2007 made like 45. We're talking half the 85. And by the way, if you worked in a hospital, not a doctor, but, you know, or a lab technician, and, you know, a real trained job, you were like 65. So there weren't many people over 85. Well, now if you ratchet forward, the houses now, since the interest rates are about the same as they were then, the median home is 410. All right, so now we've gone from 235 to 410, so we're up 60%. So if you take the same thing on the revenue side, you got to be making 150, 148, somewhere in there, if I'm doing my math. I'm going to say less than 15% of the population makes 150 a year. Not even close.
But though what's factored into a lot of that, and I think that started a little before 2008, is the biggest transfer of wealth in our history from the older generation to the baby boomer started.
Yep.
This success in the stock market started. So if you had bought you know, a hundred shares of Amazon, you know, and when it came out, or you know, Nvidia or Netflix or any of those, you could have paid cash for your house. So when you talk about that, this additional wealth that came in from outside sources is also contributed towards, you know, towards me allowing people to buy these houses.
Without a doubt, without a doubt. And matter of fact, next time you're on, let's because John will be on, we'll segue into that a little bit. What does it mean, or if anything, that and when we were Utes, do we say Utes? If you made money, you know, you made $100 a week and you put 20 in the bank and you lived on 80. That's how you built wealth. Well, that, as I just alluded to, that's gone the way of the dodo bird for just about everybody. And now it's, do you have the right stocks? Did you happen to have a house your parents gave you that they paid 50 for it? It's now 400. It's the wealth bubble for most people seemingly has nothing to do with income. Isn't that what you're really talking about, Ed?
Yep.
It's, you're right. That's a big plus if you're one of those people, but I'm not so sure it's a good thing, are you?
It doesn't, if you just look at it objectively, it doesn't matter. It is what it is. And it's like anything else. Some people were lucky enough to be in on that, and others weren't. It's the same thing that a lot of people benefit it from all that in their blue-collar jobs. Like,
yeah.
People who worked for UPS became millionaire. I have a friend who's a millionaire. He was just driving trucks for UPS, but he subscribed to their pension plan and bought every single piece of, you know, everything he could get from UPS. So, you know, you had to be someone, you got to be in the right place, but you also had to be aware of what was available to you. And I think that's part of, people aren't educated enough about the practical aspects about money, starting in grammar school. How to save money. God knows we can't teach them how to read and write anymore, so this might be a stretch. But, you know, if people should stop, money was always a taboo subject. Well, it can't be if you want people to survive and thrive.
You mean if somebody can't add or subtract, it's hard to teach them how to calculate the future value of money? How can that be?
Yeah, So the only thing that they want to teach in school, excuse my language, except for what they kids need to know to become responsible adults and say, hey, maybe you shouldn't buy that $75,000 truck, or maybe you don't need that, you know, I don't know, to get your nails done every week for $75. Well, how much could you put in the bank if you didn't do that? So it's just, you've got to pick your priorities, but if nobody tells you about that, all of a sudden you're shocked when you're broke and you're, you know, scrambling to find subsidized housing.
Well, we got a dash, but John, obviously, and Jimmy, Aud does not subscribe to the theory of our buddy Nick, who said he spent 90% of his money on women, fast cars, and booze, and he wasted the other 10%. So, anyway, Aud, thank you, John, thank you, Jimmy, thank you. SP Futures up 39, NASDAQ Futures on 178. We're back really 65% of Friday here, so I think the market's telling us the world is toning down here. Let's hope that's true. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Have a few drinks and, you know, drive home.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. JetBlue Airways. It's not the only way to fly, but it should be. Visit jetblue.com. Empower HR, your human resources partner. That's empowerhr.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. BDL Compliance Consulting. Visit bdlcc.com. DAX Research. Listen to David Andelman on Mondays and Thursdays and go to dacsresearch.net. Boom, 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 boom